This is the Mental Metal Podcast, and I am your host, Coach Matt Toman. I'm a former athlete, teacher, coach, and athletic director that switched careers after surviving cancer and a stroke in the fall of 2020. But I'm also a dad of a son and a daughter that were successful high school athletes that went on to college. Now I use that experience along with my ICF coaching certification when helping teams, coaches, and athletes from all over the country. Each week, I will pose a specific question that will help coaches of all types better understand mental toughness. In the Mental Metal Podcast, coaches will learn to help their athletes overcome adversity without being the adversity they need to overcome. And welcome back to the Mental Metal Podcast. Once again, I'm your host, Coach Matt Toman, and I'm here with my guest today, Herm Senor, or as I've come to know you, Coach Herm. That's what my, we got to know each other. You crossed paths with my son. Last year, you were a graduate assistant at University of Illinois Springfield got to know my son. So that's whenever I got the contact from you, that's what I got. It said, "Hey, Coach Herm." And I'm like, okay, well then we'll go with that. But yeah, so I know you've, and Lane had said a lot about you. He really enjoys working with you. And then I saw what you do now. You still work with athletes, working with kids, doing some basketball training. And I felt like this is going to be a really good conversation, how we can mix and match on the physical, the mental, and what we can do. But I always want to start with a little bit of a background on, you know, why you're worth listening to, right? Mm-hmm. So we got to tell the, you know, people that don't know you why Coach Herm is worth listening to. So give me a little bit of background in your basketball career, where you started, where you ended up, and we'll go from there.
I started as a little kid going to basketball games with my dad, going to watch my sisters, whether that my dad was coaching or going to watch. I have two older sisters, so going to watch them play or going with my dad to watch him referee. One of my earliest memories is there's a local team here called Pleasant Plains, and they were pretty good back then. They won state back to back, and I was on the same team as head coach Cliff Cameron. His son was my age, so I would always go to their games. My dad was ref, and I hang out with Cliff Cameron's son, Michael Cameron. He's the head coach at Jacksonville right now. So being around basketball with like that at an early age, and then going to my sister's practices, you know, helping them through drills. Like I vividly remember like cone drills, ladder drills, and me just like trying to show them and like trying to coach them up through it and hype them up, you know, at a young age. And my sister was the cheerleader, so I was always the ball boy for Southeast High School, you know, getting their shooting shirts and getting their water, like whatever I could do to make sure that the coaches could stay focused and that the players could stay focused and, you know, everybody could stay locked in. I was doing that from a young age, so I just loved the atmosphere, loved being a part of a team, being part of something bigger than myself. And, you know, just every Friday night, you can look forward to the band and the popcorn and the rivalries and everything. So I was hooked from a young age.
And what a great, you know, you've got a perspective now. I can see you're a little kid. I didn't know that your dad was an official as well, which gives you a completely different perspective sitting as a kid watching the game, because you've probably got, at Pleasant Plains in their heyday, doing all those. They had a lot of people at their gyms. I mean, it's not an enormous gym, but I'm sure it was packed. And at some point, they're all yelling at your dad, right?
Yeah. But it was cool, though, because, you know, he got a lot of respect. A lot of times people walk on the court, or when kids walk on the court, their kids get yelled at. Like, you can tell they respected my dad because they'd let me go shoot on the court, do whatever, or anytime I was walking around Springfield in general, you know, people would say, "Hey, I know your dad," or "I know your family." And my grandma was a pastor, so I know we'll get into the mental aspect a little after this, but, you know, that's where my faith started. And just having a good good roots and good connection around me made it a lot easier for me growing up. So, it was always a nice upbringing, you know, being around coaches and other players from a young age.
Oh yeah. I mean, your dad coached as well.
Yeah. He coached, my sister's travel teams. I think back then it was Capital City Future Stars. I remember he had like the coaching bag with the clipboard in it and everything, the whiteboard, and you know, they had their names on jerseys and all that stuff. So I just thought it was so cool because I was still young then, and we didn't really do travel until, you know, later, fourth or fifth grade. So I would just live through my sisters and going to their games, going to their practices, and I just have to stick to playing at the Y and Boys and Girls Club and the gym.
Yeah, but genuine certified gym rat growing up.
Oh yeah, for sure. I mean, every sport. You know, my dad played like men's league softball, and then you know, we always had like the punt, pass, and kick growing up. I was putting soccer as well because my sisters were athletic; they played soccer as well. So I pretty much they had the blueprint, and then I'm the youngest kid, and I'm the boy, so I got to do, you know, all the sports. So I mean, basketball just stuck because my dad actually refereed it, and it was indoor. It's indoors, and you know, you could play anytime. No,
and that's you like the indoor part?
Yeah, I mean, I love being outside, but outside in February for baseball is not fun, or outside in November for football is not fun at all.
Yeah, yeah, it's never raining inside. It's always, I mean, yeah.
Right. Okay, so, and also upbringing, Kevin Gamble was the coach of UIS, and my dad was coaching those games. And Coach Wanda Nettles, who she coaches around here now for the women. But so I grew up going to those games. And actually, my high school coach, Lawrence Thomas, he was an assistant at UIS back then, too, when I was growing up. So, you know, getting to be around that college atmosphere, even though UIS was NAIA back then, it was small. Those games were very intense. You can tell Coach Gamble had a swag about himself. So it was cool.
No, so you're growing up. I mean, you are growing up like rooted in the Springfield athletic community.
For sure.
Yeah. And then you played for Springfield Southeast.
Yep. I played for Southeast 2009 to 2013. I played basketball. I started sophomore year. I mean, played all 4 years, and then baseball and football as well.
Yeah. But as you said, basketball was your thing.
Yeah. So I committed to Quincy probably like February of my senior year. I had another offer from McKendree, and then after I committed to Quincy, I got an offer from Southern Indiana, Southern Indiana wanted to get more serious. So I mean, D2 seemed like a perfect route for me, could stack my academic with athletic. They had a football team, you know, UIS had a football team, so Quincy had a football team. A lot of my friends were going there, so my roommate actually played at Sacred Heart Griffin, and then he went on a scholarship as well. And we had been friends growing up. So for us to go to college together and be roommates, that was something we talked about. So, being able to play in Quincy was great because it was close. Family could come visit all the time. And Coach Bell, Marty Bell, was the head coach there and athletic director at the time. He told me he graduated everybody that came through, and he had sent probably over 20 people overseas. So from those statistics, I knew I had a pretty good chance to continue my career, graduate with a degree. So I was excited about that.
What about, so going back into, you know, you're coming from high school, going into Division II, jumping into that leap. And I think that we could talk all day about the difference in levels from 3 to 2 to 1 to whatever, but I don't think it matters a whole lot. Like, I think it's hard when you get there.
Yeah, it's definitely a different lifestyle. And Coach Bell, what he had us do is stay. So I graduated on, I want to say, that Saturday. I had my party on that Sunday. And that Monday, I was at Quincy for summer classes. So I didn't really have a choice to how quickly I could get started. And it really helped me mature because over that summer, I was staying with the men's basketball team. We're the only team staying there full time. Some football guys, you know, wanted to work. And then the women's basketball team would come when they wanted to work camps. So we were the only ones staying there, like, pretty much full time and only coming homes on the weekends. So, it allowed me to get used to taking classes, getting used to the weight room, get used to the guys, get adjusted to the maturity level needed to play at that next level.
Yeah, I think that's the word I was reaching for when you said it, is like the maturity level. Like, you have to figure it out really quick.
Yeah, there's no There's nobody there to really tell you to do things at a certain time. If you miss your alarm, you miss your alarm. Like nobody's gonna help you unless you have a really good teammate or something. And
Well,
yeah, so you gotta do a lot of things and figure it out very soon or else you'll get left behind. And that season comes around quick.
yeah. How did the tell me about the career at Quincy?
Like everybody says, when you I was CSA Athlete of the Year, Player of the Year for basketball, Athlete of the Year for all sports. So, I'm coming in with confidence, but I'm understanding that everybody's the best player coming to the team, and they have a lot of stuff built, foundation built before I got there. So my freshman year, my first game was against Xavier at Xavier and Cincy. We walk out an hour before the game, and their whole student section's filled. They're
Yeah.
loud. I'm like, oh, this is college basketball. This is great. It's exactly what you dream of. My first shot. Well, first of all, I got in after like the first meeting. I wasn't expecting it because I played like the one and the two in college, and we had a lot of guards. One of the things McKendree coaches said is you don't want to go there and sit at the end of the bench. And I mean, I was confident in myself, so I got there. Got in probably like 15 minutes left in the game. I think first shot I took was a three, made that. So I was like, oh yeah, I'm gonna feel comfortable. But it was still a big adjustment because especially playing D1 guys right off the bat, it's like those guys weren't missing threes. They're like 7 foot tall. Like it's a little bit different than D2. So once we started playing Division II competition, I think it was Kentucky Wesleyan. Started settling a little more, start getting more drives to the basket. I think the main thing, especially somebody like myself, 5'10", 5'11", is going in there and developing a floater or what's something Coach Brock like is a back foot pivot. So just putting your pride to the side, realizing there's people in there that are huge. You might not be
Yeah.
able to shoot layups or floaters or whatever all the time. Got to pass it out or make better decisions. So that was my biggest adjustment to college.
Yeah, I think that's the biggest difference. As I mentioned, they're talking about the difference in levels. I don't think it's as much the skill level as it is the skill level in bigger bodies, right?
Yeah,
It's
100%.
amazing differences, and it's hard to deal with.
Yeah, skill making and decision making, whether that's like stacking moves. So you hear people talk about it on podcasts all the time is, you let the defense make a mistake, but usually you have a go-to in mind that you want to go to, right? So now adding counters to that and adding fakes and adding different options and slips or whatever it is that you may have, I feel like at lower levels or whatever, you might be able to get away with it. Somebody might shot fake. You shot fake, they might jump. But at the next level, you might shot fake, they're staying down, and then you go up, they're still blocking it. So you got to figure out different finishes or passes or whatever you're going to do next, you need to know for sure.
Yeah, I think that's the difference is as you were talking about having all these accolades in high school, which meant a lot of the times you really dictate what you want to go do, right? I'm gonna go do this, I'm gonna do this, I'm gonna do this. And when you talk about stacking moves on top of each other, I think that's a it's a physical skill, but there it's also a mental thing. It's like you have to be okay with, oh, this move isn't gonna work, so this is next, and I'm gonna do this. And I don't know. I think that takes a lot of practice. Yeah, I'm like, you have to, well, it has a lot of failure. You have to have a lot of failure to be able to want to do that.
So, yeah, I think the one thing I got really comfortable with in college was we were blessed to have Synergy Sports editing. So, ask for coach's login, get that Synergy. Go right to my missed shots and my turnovers, and it's just all right there. I don't need a coach to explain it to me. I can look at all my mistakes right there, and it allows you to be comfortable with your mistakes and not run from that growth level. Because if your potential's here and here's where you're at now, doing that work to understand what's wrong with your game or how your game can improve, you'll be able to reach that potential. So, yeah, college was a lot of like not only having different moves, but also taking the time out to realize the other team has certain tendencies, I have certain tendencies, my teammates have certain tendencies, and as a point guard, I need to understand what those are, or else I'm at a disadvantage and I'm putting my team at a disadvantage. So if I want to win and I say I want to win and I get in front of my teammates and say I want to win, I better be doing the work to make sure we can do that.
Now, I want to bring back something you said. You said you're getting into the film, you're looking at it, and you look up your missed shots and your turnovers, right? Like, no, I don't skip that point that you're not just going back to the made shots and the assists, right? You're intentionally, and it's funny that when you do that, because I know that we have to be positive, right? And we gotta, and you do have to celebrate the things you're doing well, but you also have to have a positive mindset around the growth over that comes from your mistakes.
For sure. Yeah, you. I feel like if you go and look at your makes, you're not getting better at anything. And I was listening to Jamal Crawford talk. He's a player. He talks about how he didn't really practice a lot of those moves, right? He just did them off reaction. And when you really do think about it, as a high level athlete, most of your best, most athletic plays are off instinct. They're nothing that you plan. Like, you might have did certain pieces, but you never done that exact move before. So once you realize that most of your mistakes are your bad habits that you do over and over and over, then you realize it's easy to break that bad habit because you have a tell. And that's another thing that like Gilbert Arenas talks about on his podcast is a lot of the best defensive players would tell him like, before you did this move, you'd hitch, or before you did this, you'd do that, blah, blah, blah. So for me as a point guard, me coming off a ball screen, I want to hit my big. I'm not selfish. I don't want to shoot a three off that every time. But if I'm not reading the help defender, the tag defender, or whatever you want to call these help defenders, if I'm not reading them and I'm making the same pass mistake over and over, then that's something I need to notice and change. So yeah, if you look at if I just look at every time I come off a ball screen and make a three or make a floater and put up my highlights, that's one thing. But if I can break down why I'm doing something wrong, that's how we win championships.
Yeah, and it's interesting you brought up ball screens and just that, because there's a ton of that now in basketball. Seems like it's a big part of a lot of teams' games. I can't remember the number, Herm, but I was listening to a podcast and some coaches broke down the different defensive tactics, because the defense can tackle an on-ball screen. Like, I want to say they had over 100 different ways that you could handle it, right? And that's mind-blowing, because and whenever you're the guard, whenever you're the point guard or whoever pulling that off, that means there's so many options on. You got to read that to know what you're trying to do.
But that, I guess that's where the fun in the game comes from,
Oh,
because
absolutely.
especially with training now, I think sometimes when I tell the kids that they have options, they either go one or two ways. They either are like, oh, dang, I have to make a decision. Like, you're not just going to tell me what I need to do. Or like, great, I get to be creative and make something up or make a good read. So, yeah, I think come off a ball screen, if you have like, or just in any general, in any move, if you have 2 to 3 moves plus 2 to 3 counters per move, you'll never be stuck. And like we mentioned, if you're able to understand what those coverages are, so you may not know every 1 through 100, but if you know 1 through 35, you're probably doing way better than a lot of people.
Well, and that's and I wasn't saying that to know that you had to know all this stuff, because some of them are so similar. But
For
there's
sure.
just so many different ways that they could attack you and do things. And I think that just that mentality, just the whole idea of looking at your mistakes, I think that's the trick, is being able to look at your mistakes and see them as positives, because, oh, somebody stopped me and somebody's getting me, and I can learn from that. And that is, I think that's the trick, the trap a lot of kids get into, is not being able to be okay with their mistakes.
Oh yeah, for sure, for sure. And growing up in Springfield, I feel like mistakes come in very different forms, whether that's on the court, off the court, whatever issues that people have, a lot of different things they're going through. And I feel like that's what I've seen growing up is I've seen a lot of people leave Springfield, come back with nothing to give back. And it's not because they don't want to, it's because within the process, whether they went to a JUCO or a D1 or D2, whatever NAIA, D3, whatever school they went to, something happened and then they weren't able to come back from that mistake, or they weren't able to continue playing for some reason. So I tried to learn from that and try not to go through those similar things. So that way, when I got to these places, I was doing things like watching film. I was doing things like, meeting with my coaches, hanging out with my friends, talking to people in the athletic office to make sure, we're just engaged with everything that's going on, starting new clubs and stuff like that. So when you see things go so wrong or whatever, and I'm not saying like the worst things happen from people, from athletes from Springfield, but we've definitely, there's so many talented people that you're like, dang, why is he not still playing? And you understand it, so you want to avoid that and you want to do what's best for you. So that's when you get into these situations when it, now it's on the court and it's easy to make a good decision, like you're putting all your eggs in one basket basically by saying, I want to continue with this career and do my best because I don't want to go back to Springfield and not give my community anything. So then everything like making reads and making extra effort and hustling, that becomes easy.
Mental Metal Coaching is driven by a passion for sharing knowledge and experience that will allow athletes and coaches to grow, play, and live in a positive way. We offer a range of coaching and professional development services. First and foremost, we offer individual mental coaching for athletes, and it's easily the most efficient and effective way to help athletes replace fear and anxiety with positivity and confidence. Mental Metal Coaching has helped middle school setters to high school lacrosse middies to D1 offensive linemen. If you have an athlete that needs to improve their mindset and athletics, mental coaching is the answer. We also offer team coaching, which uses the same concepts as individual mental coaching, but applies them in a group setting. Team bonding outings are great, but they do nothing to address the thoughts and feelings that can derail a team. Team coaching does address that, and it's a great option for helping your team grow. Finally, Mental Metal Coaching offers social, emotional learning, professional development programs for educators and coaches. There are self-paced online programs, there are virtual coaching options, and even in-person seminars available. This PD will help increase the mental health of your staff and eventually your student athletes and the culture of your school. All of the Mental Metal Coaching programs have the same goal. Our mission is to help athletes and coaches develop a resilient and spirited mindset that will help them confidently face any obstacles or challenges they seek, regardless of their situation. If you would like to see the same in your athlete, your team, and your staff, contact Coach Toman for more information.
Yeah, and this idea of it's not just because you talked and you went on to play pro ball, right?
Right.
And it's not the guys that go on and can have some success in pro ball or play pro ball. It's not just the best players, right? There's a mentality there that has like you have to succeed at that level because
For sure.
you it's not just talent and
Yeah,
not just not physical ability.
no, not at all. I would say with me, it definitely was not just talent. I think it was just perfect fit, perfect timing, because if you look at my stats, like at some point in the NCAA, that Division II that year, I think I was leading in total assist and I was leading in or in top 10 in like assist to turnover ratio. At the end of the year, I think I ended number 9 in total assists and probably like top 20 or something, assist to turnover ratio, led the GLVC in assist, but I didn't get any accolades. Like I wasn't first team, second team, honorable, nothing. Like four of my teammates got three got first two got first team, one got second team, one got defensive, all defensive team. But me as the point guard and everybody else on my starting five is getting looks, but I'm not getting anything. But, you know, being from the background that I am from, you know, with being a servant leader and being humble and stuff, like, there's nothing for me to say to that, because that's not why I'm playing anyway. I'm playing for the glory of God and to, you know, just share the talent that I have, right? So if you look at all my accolades or my lack of accolades, you wouldn't think that's a professional basketball player.
Right.
But the guy that I said that got first team, he got runner up for player of the year in the conference in GLVC, and he made the D2 All-American game. So with him going so far and with him getting professional looks, our professional coach asked him if I wanted to come play with him. So, you know, right place, right time, doing the right things, getting seen in the right way. Because, you know, every time he's posting up or trailing, you know, it's me throwing him the feed and putting it in a place where he doesn't have to keep banging down low to shoot. I'm putting it at his hand so he just turns and goes right up. So that's something I felt like the coach valued over me getting all conference or being all American. Like, I didn't need those labels to be looked at as needed and necessary on a professional level.
Yeah. And, but I also think that it's part about when you were talking about showing up, putting in time, doing the film, mm-hmm. doing all those things. I don't think there are some guys, gals that go to play pro, whatever, that are good enough that they don't have to do that stuff. I mean, there's always exceptions, right?
Yeah.
But I think the vast majority, if you're not putting that extra effort into growth, looking at film, being mature, having the right attitude, enough, eventually you're going to get knocked down enough that you're not going to want to do it.
Right. And I think one thing that I was really good at is I actually enjoyed everything that I'm doing. Like, I was blessed to grow up with parents that, you know, they live the life that they love, right? I have sisters that love what they do. And so what I mean by that is my dad was a part of groups where he's like planning trips, or he's planning stuff for our church, planning stuff for the youth. So me growing up, I knew that it was, or me being in college or on a team, I know it's not all about what I do on the court. So one thing that we did really well at Quincy is off the court, we'd go bowl together. We'd go play frisbee golf together. You know, we just hang out in the rooms together, playing video games all the time. So I feel like when you expose yourself in different spaces to people, you're vulnerable. Then it becomes easy to break down those barriers to accomplish all those things. And I think that's one of the things I try to convey to the kids that I train right now is, as soon as they come in, no matter what, I usually try to ask them, do you play any other sports or do you do any other activities? Because if so, like, it's going to be so fun for me to train them, because I can make them do so many different things where they're doing hand-eye coordination or reactions, right? Rather than just dribbling the ball and shooting.
So, and I agree with all that, but you're throwing words out like humble, servant, leader, being vulnerable. Like, those don't always jive with what we're trying to, with kind of like the culture for athletics, right? It's right. Like, it's, and I love what you're saying. I agree with you 100%. I'm just telling you, it doesn't fit the narrative on what a lot of times we're trying to tell.
Yeah.
I don't know who's trying to tell them, but just the media, whatever. But you get what I'm saying. It's that idea of like, you have to go kill, be like the best. I got to be this. I got to, and you're talking about being humble and vulnerable.
Yeah. I just feel like I've been around the right people, around the right coaches, leaders, even just fans and people, you know, growing up. The one thing people always tell me growing up is just, they didn't say, I like how you shoot, I like your pass. They just say, I love the way you play. I just like how you just play with good energy. And like, I feel like that I can play that way because I'm thinking these things. You know, I grew up going to Fellowship of Christian Athletes from a young age. Got to meet like people like Anthony Parker, who played on the Cleveland Cavaliers, played overseas. And you got to hear stories for people that, you know, most kids probably don't know are in the NBA, but he's coming through humbly speaking to us in Springfield, Illinois at an FCA camp, which most NBA players would not do. So, you know, when you have people doing that and impacting your life, it's like, what does my trajectory look like? And it can't look too far from it. Like, especially with social media, there's never a time where like, if somebody reaches out to me or says something to me, there's every time where I ignore them or don't say anything back, because that acknowledgement of, you know, you're human, I'm human, we're all in this to get something done. Like, you can't never leave that. So I would say, like, even though I was like a young kid, I would say like refs, for example, like, yeah, it's hard to understand like why they call certain things at certain times. But once you get older, you realize, you know, we're all just human. We're all trying to make the right, right decision. And once you like mature and realize that, that's why I think you start to realize what basketball means to this world and how much you learn actually from sports. So if you're arrogant or whatever, you can't really see what you're actually getting out of the situation, and, you know, you'll be stuck. And that's why I mentioned the people earlier, like maybe the people from Springfield that I'm expecting to go on and do great, like there's just something that wasn't there that we're helping them see past, you know, the struggles or whatever was going on. But that's why I always chose to be a certain way.
Yeah, I agree. I think the arrogance or the entitlement keeps you from, you're right, you're stuck. It keeps you from growing at all, because you're like, I've already got all the answers. It's just, why are these people not getting out of my way? Right. For and sure. It's like, that's, yeah, it's not a great way to grow.
No. And yeah, you know, I don't know. I don't never wanted to not get to the things that were destined for me. So I just know, just having fun, being humble, and, you know, working hard and understanding what I don't know so I can make it something that make it into a strength. And then just also being my grandma's the pastor, you know, she had her own church in Lincoln at some point too. So we would drive there and listen. And, you know, there's always guest pastors at your churches, or you always go to conferences. I've listened to so many great speakers in general that it's just like, there's no way that I know more than everybody else in the world combined. So I'm always going to place myself to listen to what somebody's telling me.
No, what a funny way to put that, right? Because I think that, like, when we do get arrogant, and we all fall into that trap sometimes, it's always a sliding scale. But when we get like that, to say that, well, I think I know what's best, right? Or, you know, it's like, how can you, why would you think you know what's best, rather than at least accepting these ideas? So just a great way to put it, and a kind of a humorous way to put it, that, like, thinking you know better than everybody, right?
So, no, it's impossible.
Yeah. What about, and now tell me about what you're doing now.
Yeah. So right now I have, I've been training, since, I want to say after my senior year in college. I've tried to get clients. So that first year before I went pro, in between my first and second year, it picked up. And then after my second year, once I realized, like, I didn't get the offers that I wanted to continue, I wasn't, it wasn't feeling like a career. It was feeling more like something I'd do for 8 months, and then I'd have to figure out how to make more money in the summer. So I figure, well, when I go overseas anyway, they're putting me in the schools. They're putting me coaching the club team on the Fridays, coaching different club teams for schools after school. So I'm doing a combination of those three. And I hooked up with my partner with Make It Work Global to start doing training, to brand my training that I was already doing. So I figured, why not do that more? Because not to say that people in Springfield weren't doing it, but it was more so somebody who's playing pro right now that is offering these sessions to these kids, because, you know, coaches that are older may not be able to do the exact move. I pride myself on being able to, you know, if I want you to go cross over between the legs and go lay it above the rim, that's what I can go do. Like, I don't have to stop it and not show you the real exact move. So I figured, if I can use my body now to do that, and I'm not playing anyway, I might as well do that. So and it's not just training. Of course, there's a whole lot that goes into it, whether there's a lot of recruiting and scouting, because one, you have to, and marketing, because you have to find the kids, you have to vet the kids, because you don't want to train just anybody. You know, I'm all for, you know, kids getting in the gym.
Okay,
getting better,
let's stop because I know what you're talking about here, but I think that's it's a very good point that you're like I have to vet the kids. So mm-hmm. I have to vet the kids that the kids are showing up, the parents are showing up, potentially showing up with money, wanting to, mm-hmm. and I'm like, maybe not.
Right.
I get it. I understand it. And in my business, I feel the same way. It's like there's some situations. I'm like, I don't feel like I can. It's not that I can't help the kid. It's like they're not in the right space to be able to be helped. Right. Sure. But what I want to hear it from your perspective when you're talking about vetting these kids, because I think there's a lesson there for parents and for kids.
Yes. Yeah, so I feel like it starts with the first few sessions. And then it also starts with me seeing them when they don't know I'm seeing them. One thing my grandma always told me is you never know who's watching, and like, whether that's good or bad, you never know who's keeping an eye on you. And for me, that meant I was the youngest grandson, but I have a lot of second cousins, third cousins that are younger than me. So, that meant that all of them, everything that I do, they're watching what I do. So if I like to go to a party on a Saturday night, when they grow up and become my age, they're going to think it's okay to go to a party on a Saturday night. So that's just an example.
Good example, Herm.
Yeah.
Go ahead.
No, I just say that to say, so when a kid comes into the gym and they're training, and I'm watching them, it's like, how are you, if I ask you a question, are you answering it? Actually, let's start at the beginning. I send you this waiver. Did you go through and sign it? Did you answer honestly? Like, I have questions on there, like your dream school or like your position. What do you think you're good at? And like, you know, some people put crazy answers like, I want to shoot threes, and they're like 8 years old. It's like, doesn't make sense, but at least you know they're dreaming big. But so it starts with that. Then they get into the gym. Are they answering my questions? Are they listening? Are they being able to notice what other kids do and then copy that in their own footwork? Like, if I say run to the next drill, are they running to the next drill? If I say hold your balls, are they holding the balls? You know, just small things. And then that moves on from that to, when their parents say, hey, we got to get out of the gym, go to this next spot, are they listening? Or are they putting up 20 extra shots before they put their flip-flops on and get out of the gym when their parents told them, hey, we have to, you know, we got to go to your sister's swim meet. Like, let's go right now. When I go to their games, are they stretching? Are they shooting the warm-up that I told them to do? Like, I want my kids to do form shooting every time they come into the gym. When they have that time at a game or in a practice, are they actually doing it? Are they joking around? Like, are they going hard? Like, when they get called out during a game, are they high-fiving the teammates when they come off the court? And it's really, I say all these different things because a great player that, you know, we're asking these college-level, scholarship-level coaches to give our kids scholarships, but, like, are they doing that? And if they aren't, it's like, you're not doing all these things that add up to a scholarship, then how can you expect a scholarship? And then not only that, how can you expect to get something out of my sessions, out of me training you, if you're not really seeing the goal that I want you to get to? So, yeah.
My favorite part you said in there, you and I can definitely be friends now. All right. Not that we couldn't before. The idea about starting any workout with some form shooting, because I think that it tells me so much about a kid, because it's a muscle memory thing. Of course, we know that, but I mm-hmm. think that the reason that kids don't do it, even when they're told, hey, go do form shooting, start form shooting, we got to get this before you can start launching threes, you got to do this.
Yeah.
I think the reason they don't do it is because it does feel a little bit embarrassing, right?
Yeah.
And I think that when you see it, tell a kid this, that this is really important, they want to do it. I think it's a small sign, but I think it's one of those signs of humility. It's like, all right,
for sure.
Like, coach said I need to do this, even though I can make it from 2 feet, right? Of mm-hmm. course I can, but that's not what it's about. And I think I think it's a huge sign. I'm always noticing the kids that show up in an open gym and the first thing they do is go do some form shooting.
for sure. And I think, I mean, from there, obviously, as you get older, as you mature, it gets even deeper than that. As soon as you get in, are you doing banded resistance stretching?
Yeah.
And then are you doing footwork warm-ups, you know, getting your body warmed up? Are you doing, you know, dynamic warm-ups? Then are you form shooting before you shoot that three? Are you shooting some free throws? Or yeah, because like you said, it's humility and patience. Like, it's like, I know I want to get to my deepest range. I know I want to shoot from the volleyball line, shoot from NBA range, but like, can I take these first 5 to 10 minutes to build up my legs? See where, because what, that's the one thing I try to tell my kids as well, is like, especially with me playing multiple sports, I know how my body feels before I step on the field, the court, in the weight room, whatever it is. And I know that if I don't do certain things, I'm not going to perform well. And that's why I try to get to them is, yeah, you might not need to stretch right now, but in 5 to 10 years, you're, body's going to be different. You're going to be hurting. Your back isn't going to be the same. You're going to have to stretch just to get to your 100%. And if you're getting used to not doing that, you're already starting off at a deficit, and we don't want that.
Oh, I mean, if you want to be able to do the big things, you have to do the little things.
For sure.
I mean, you have to do that way. And it's funny, you're talking about that shooting, and I'll make sure he doesn't listen to this, but I mean, you've seen Lane enough to know, like, he's one of those guys that will shoot from half court and make it look fairly easy, right? But I mean, he's shooting from the volleyball line like it's easy, right?
For sure.
But he just starts with all the things you're talking about, right?
Yeah.
Like, he starts with form shooting. He starts with the banded resistance. He gets in the gym and he works out. I mean, everybody wants to be able to go do that, but you have to do all the little things, like a lot of time putting into those little things to make that happen.
Metal is a person's ability to face adversity in a spirited and resilient manner. It is a great skill to have for athletics and for life, but it is not something we are born with. If you want it, you have to forge your metal. And if you listen to the Mental Metal Podcast, you already know that, but not everybody else does yet. So help me out by ordering and wearing some sweet The Mental Metal Podcast gear. We've got short sleeve tees, long sleeve tees, and some super comfortable hoodies. Order online today and you can have your gear in no time. But the best part is that every order helps support the show and helps me spread the message that mental toughness is a trait that can and should be built. So find the link in the show notes, order your gear, and start showing that you know how to forge your metal.
Yep. And that's why, you know, I'd kind of do what I do and try to put these athletes then around other kids or older people who are doing what I'm doing. So what I mean by that is, if I have the UIS guys in the gym working out, then they see that. If, like, you know, if there's an overlap, like where the kids work out before the kids coming after them or something, they see how they're starting their workout, they see how they're finishing their workout, they see the attention to detail. Like, some of my high school guys that I got to work out with, like Max, last year, they're like, if you missed in a drill with Max, you're not gonna win. So, like, they see how the margin for error basically is so much smaller. And if you can control what you can control at the beginning, two books that I know Coach Brock really likes, and I just finished, well, I'm in the middle of Grit, and I just finished the Habits book he gave me for graduation last year. But it's, you know, you're just stacking those things that you know works, and then you give yourself, like, if you know what you want to do for A and B, but your goal is to get to C, then, you know, just line those up. So that way, every time you need to do those, it all goes in order. And that's what I think stretching and form shooting is.
Yeah. And what you're talking about bringing, have your young guys watch the UIS guys and see that, I think it's the coolest thing about basketball. And the fact that I saw a stat the other day, that Draymond Green has made more 3-pointers in his career than Larry Bird.
Larry Bird,
right? Yeah. Which is, I can't even get into that. But the game has changed so much because I think that players develop on each other, right? Yeah. And it's like, oh, here's the habit it takes to get there. Oh, I'm going to add this habit. I'm going to do this habit. And before you know it, a guy who's known for defense and getting in fights has made more three-pointers than one of the best three-point shooters in the history of the game. Just because they're in different eras and the game is progressing that way. And I think that is awesome.
No, I'm glad you brought up Draymond because it was elementary school, had to be. When he was at Michigan State, I came and I saw him. I went to Illinois game and I saw him play against Illinois. And I think he put up like 40 or something crazy, 30-something crazy. And I was like, this guy's LeBron James of college. Like, he's so good. I don't think people know how good of a scorer Draymond really was. And that's what we mean by, yeah, he might have some things that he's going on with, like, far as temper, whatever. But when it comes to being a student of the game and being humble enough to realize I've got Steph Curry and Klay Thompson on, and, you know, Andre Iguodala, Sean Livingston, like, I don't need to be shooting the ball. You know, Barbosa, like, he has all kind of people that are way better than him at scoring. He can set screens and hit people on dimes. But like you said, he still had to, when those big men were sagging off, he still had to shoot the three at some point and realize that that was a part of his game and that he couldn't just totally not do it. And I think that's the difference between being elite and just being very, very good. So he realized he still had to shoot.
Draymond was a dude in college, man. Yeah. Like, he had I mean, like, but I just
legs off the dribble shots.
And I can't condone his actions in pros because it's like, it's mostly what we don't want kids to be. But I'm just saying that the game has progressed so much because of stuff like that. And because, you know, trainers like you that are working with kids and saying, here's the little things you have to do, these habits you need to stack to get better. Because I mean, the high school game, the things that high school kids can do now is amazing. And it's all just stacking, you know, those skills and working on them.
Oh yeah, for sure. It's in my mind, it's all a progression, right?
Yeah.
It's all right. We sit down and we talk about these goals. Then I go into the weight room to build the smallest foundation of it, my body, everything the thing that I carry around every day. Then after I build up my body, you know, I can go to the film room to see what I need to work on to build my strengths from last year to this year. Or then from that, then you go into the court. Then from the court, you know, you go and do therapy or rehab or whatever. So it never really stops. And you're just constantly understanding why you're doing it at a certain time. One thing my dad taught me as a young kid was knowing time and score. So always got to know time and score. He played at Coastal Carolina back when.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, they were like 79 to 83, I think. So they were NAIA, College of Charleston, and teams like that they were playing. So with him playing at that level and him doing good things, like not just him like leading his team in rebounding at 5'11", or him leading the team in free throws, like him doing those type of things and then coming back and telling me, it's like, oh, it's not all athleticism. It's just, you know, no time and score. No, every situation calls for something. All the drills that we do, they got to be timed, or you have to have a goal or something, because in the game, there's always a time and there's always a score and there's always defense. So, sometimes you let them go one-on-one and stuff, but you got to put kids in the mindset of, you know, kind of imagining where everybody's going to be, what it's going to feel like. So that way they can get a sense of how it's actually going to happen.
And, yeah.
You know, as a sports psychologist, like, mindset is everything. And if you can actively think you're in that moment, then like the muscles are firing as if you're in that moment.
So I talk to kids about this all the time, about like, if you already have the muscle memory. So like, if you can shoot, right? If you and you know, like the great brain hack is some visualization, right? If you can just close your eyes and see yourself making shots, your brain doesn't know the difference. And you have to, like, if you visualize yourself succeeding at these things, you're gaining the confidence without actually doing it. Now, I'm saying you got to get to the gym and shoot, right? But the visualization and seeing yourself positively doing these things, that's not just like the woo-woo stuff. Like, it's like psychology and the research on this is clear. Like, you put yourself in the, see yourself succeeding in these situations, and you're more likely to do it.
Yeah, I 100% agree. You're right. Talk to the right person on that, because I laid down before my first year going overseas. I laid down in my living room with my head just flat, just laid as flat as I could, arms out to the side. And then, you know, middle of summer, sun beaming down, just lay there and just visualize, like, not like a meditation or anything, literally just laid there and just felt positive energy, felt what would it feel like for me to go overseas. And I think this was actually before I even signed to play or got a look. I think I had only gone to a pro camp, so I didn't even have anything concrete yet, but I visualized myself just doing things successful, like whatever I learned from told me to just visualize the positive things, that if it was negative, just try not to think about it, but see the ball going through the hoop, feel myself dribbling the ball, whatever, feel myself doing all the good plays. My first year, I go over there, and this team had actually won on a buzzer beater. It was called Manchester Magic. They beat my team the year before when I wasn't on it on a three-pointer. They came back, hit a big three. So this year, or that year that I was there, we went to their home and beat them on a three. So, and I hit a buzzer beater. So it's like I was laying down visualizing that. And I didn't see the exact moment, but I felt how it would feel. And I felt positive things happen. And then it happened. So I'm a big, firm believer.
Oh, it's another one of those things we're talking about doing the form shooting. It's these little things. You just like, they matter, right? And they feel like because I work with kids and I start talking about this visualization and some of this meditation and mindfulness. And they're just like, they look at you sideways and we're like, how can that help? And I'm like, and then there you go. It's that whole thing about you thinking, I already know. Right. That's not going to work. And if a kid tells me, I don't think that's going to work, guess what? It's not going to work. Right. If you believe it and you work on it and you like lean into it, it absolutely helps.
Yeah. It's very similar, I say, to what the Bible is trying to teach. Like, you have that faith of a mustard seed, and then you build on that faith by action. Like, you know, you can't have miracles without action. You can't just expect God to just do everything for you.
Right.
You then got to put the work in on the ground floor. And, you know, hey, you say this thing's going to happen in 6 months and you really believe it. What are you doing from now until then to show that you're going to be prepared and ready for it?
Yeah, I agree. It's not, I mean, you're not sitting there on your floor trying to manifest this, you know,
God, no.
Just like you get off your floor and then you get up and you go put the work in, right?
Go right to the gym.
It's just like that, right? Yeah.
Yeah.
I agree. Yeah. So I tell you what, we're getting short on time here, man. This has been a great conversation. What have we not chatted about? What have I not asked that we should have about your training business or anything else, Coach Herm?
I mean, really, when we're just talking about training and sports psychology in general, I just want the kids to go down a path of understanding what it really is and what it means for them to build a mental routine before they build a physical routine. And then also just to know that, like me, myself, I'm someone they can always reach out to, but really they should be building their own network of people that they trust, that they can always reach out to, whether it's about getting better on the court, getting better in academics, whatever they want to decide. You know, we've been in the position where we're trying to choose school, we're trying to choose our career. So for them to ask me questions like that, you know, or ask me if they know anybody that are doing the things that, you know, they're struggling with. So really, I, you know, just want to encourage all the kids I train, but then all the kids who may like possibly see the podcast, you know, to, you know, don't be scared to be vulnerable and ask for help. And whether that's, like you say, getting more playing time, or I just struggle with math and I really need to get better at math so I can play. Like, don't not ask questions, because as a 28-year-old, I see that if at 14, I didn't say,
no.
If I didn't go out for the football team like I said I wanted to, I'd be sitting here regretting that I didn't play football.
Yeah.
But, you know, you got to do those things.
Yeah, I think you have to be asking questions. You have to be asking for help. You have to be asking for criticism. But then you also got to be ready to accept it.
For sure.
Right? Like, you're like, hey, what do I need to work on? And then not get upset whenever they ask, give the answer, right? I think that's that, which is really hard to do, right?
Yep, but that's like the same as me. I've always got to keep learning from trainers and coaches that are better than myself. And I've got to keep growing and show that I don't know every single thing, but I'm learning to get better, to share with others.
Yeah, it's great. That I find that the toughness that I'm trying to teach kids, the toughness and the strength, it isn't what people think. You have to be humble and vulnerable to really gain those things. Yeah. It seems counterintuitive, but that's how you get it.
No, for sure. And you can, I mean, me personally, I've obviously had experience with Lane, so you can tell, like, he was raised that way. You know, person looks you in the eyes, tells you what he's thinking, works hard, can have a good time, but then also ask for help, but also tell you if he thinks, hey, it should be a different way. Like, you know, mm-hmm. You can tell from how he is that's what you believe in. You know, I feel like that's similar to what my dad tried to raise me to be like. So you can tell with people how intentional they are about their space and their surrounding. And it's great to be around, I think.
It's one of my favorite words is intentional, right? Mm-hmm. If we're being intentional about something. Like, if you're not intentional about where we're trying to be, then we end up wherever, right? For so sure. At least we know if we get there, we don't, if we're not intentional. So I appreciate the kind words about Lane there. And I love it. And tell me again, what's the name of your training?
So, kind of gets confusing because, you know,
that's
I've been
okay.
working with their two brands, but I have my own business called Good Enough Too, where I do some marketing and stuff, but I partner with a brand called Make It Work Global to do the training and stuff. So,
okay. I'll throw some stuff in the show notes. Make sure if anybody needs to get a hold of you and has questions for you.
For sure. Yeah. Awesome. I got a lot of drills and stuff on the Instagram page and stuff. So
beautiful. Coach, it's been great talking to you. I can't thank you enough for coming on.
I appreciate you having me.
You bet. Mental Metal Coaching is driven by a passion for sharing knowledge and experience that will allow athletes and coaches to grow, play, and live in a positive way. We offer a range of coaching and professional development services. First and foremost, we offer individual mental coaching for athletes, and it's easily the most efficient and effective way to help athletes replace fear and anxiety with positivity and confidence. Mental Metal Coaching has helped middle school setters to high school lacrosse middies to D1 offensive linemen. If you have an athlete that needs to improve their mindset in athletics, mental coaching is the answer. We also offer team coaching, which uses the same concepts as individual mental coaching, but applies them in a group setting. Team bonding outings are great, but they do nothing to address the thoughts and feelings that can derail a team. Team coaching does address that, and it's a great option for helping your team grow. Finally, Mental Metal Coaching offers social, emotional learning, professional development programs for educators and coaches. There are self-paced online programs, there are virtual coaching options, and even in-person seminars available. This PD will help increase the mental health of your staff and eventually your student athletes and the culture of your school. All of the Mental Metal Coaching programs have the same goal. Our mission is to help athletes and coaches develop a resilient and spirited mindset that will help them confidently face any obstacles or challenges they seek, regardless of their situation. If you would like to see the same in your athlete, your team, and your staff, contact Coach Toman for more information.
Some really good stuff in that interview there with Coach Herm. I really enjoyed him coming on, and I've just gotten to know him, and it's just a great guy. And hopefully you can see that it comes through in his passion with stuff. But then I think that what really stands out to me, and I said it during the interview, was his focus on humility and servant leadership and vulnerability. Those aren't the first words that come up whenever we talk about athletes and what we're trying to be. And again, what social media shows and what media shows. And we're all about the fire and the determination and the will. And you have to have those things, right?
You've got to have that effort. You got to have that drive, that motivation. You have to have all those things. And those are cool things, right? They make cool t-shirts and a lot of slogans. All your slogans are based off of that, like, you know, having energy and drive and all these things. And it was just refreshing to me here to have somebody on who's been successful. He was a successful high school player, very successful Division II player at Quincy, went on, played pro ball, which anybody who can go and do those things and be successful as an athlete, as a parent of an athlete, you need to pay attention how they're able to do that, because it's another, every time you go up another level, it's just, you have to be more locked in. I think that the older an athlete gets, the less the physical ability matters. Young, you know, we often see the kids that are really, really good. If they grow early, they're strong and they can do things. But as we progress, your best, a lot of times the pros, the guys that made it pros, aren't necessarily the best on their team. I was talking with a baseball coach the other day, and he had a kid who was the fourth best player on his high school team, and he's the only one that's still playing pro ball. And it wasn't a physical ability. It was a mental ability, and the way he drove and did things right and constantly learning and constantly improving and just how he handled situations. And I think it's worth listening to. And especially I want to focus on some of those ideas that Coach Herm said, specifically on that being able to be humble and be vulnerable. And there was a spot in there in the interview, I'm sure you heard it, where we were talking about taking on new clients. He does training for athletes, and I do mental coaching for athletes. And we both mentioned that we have to vet kids first, vet the kids and the parents, and make sure that, say, you know, that's somebody I want to work with. And that might seem elitist. I don't know, but it's not. That's not the point. I've worked with some athletes, and Coach Herm has probably gotten that way from the same way. I can't help a kid who doesn't want to be helped. And what I mean by that is I can't help a kid that's not humble enough to listen, humble enough to want to change, and can't be vulnerable at all and thinks they already know everything and doesn't want to change. And it's the same way with the physical and the skill sets that Coach Herm is doing stuff. If a kid or a parent comes in and they just don't think that anything needs changed and they're not willing to work on anything, then there's nothing I can do. There's nothing Coach Herm can do. There's nothing any coach can do. If you can't be coachable and don't want to learn, then you're not going to. And I think that makes and I don't think that we always equate that to being humble and vulnerable, but that's exactly what it is, right? That you have to have the effort. You have to have the motivation. You have to have the drive. You have to have all those things to get better. But I don't think you make progress if you're not being humble and if you're not being vulnerable. If you're humble and you're vulnerable, you go into things like coaching sessions. You go into workout sessions. You go into a new session, a new program, working with a new coach. And you realize, as he said, I don't know everything. I don't know more than everybody else combined, right? If you can think that, you're like, I don't know everything. I need to be humble here and vulnerable and be willing to learn. Then you're able to, you're more willing to try new things. You're more willing to fail. Yeah, you should want to go fail. And that's such a hard idea for a lot of the athletes I work with, is that you should want to go fail. Failure is the success, is the path to success. It's not the opposite of success. Failure is the path to success. And you have to be, the more humble you are, the more vulnerable you make yourself, the more you put yourself out there, the more failure you have. And if you aren't willing to fail, then you're probably not going to learn. You're not going to grow. And then also what the humility and the vulnerability does is when those failures come, it allows you to take positive lessons from those failures. and be like, yeah, I expected, not so much expected to fail, but pushing myself to where I know I'm going to fail, knowing that, hey, I don't know everything. I can't do everything. Coach Herm is going to put players in very hard situations. So you can do that with your right hand. Let's try it on your left, right? You can do it at this speed. Let's try it, let's amp it up 50%, speed it up. You can do that against this defender. Can you do it against a little taller defender, a little faster defender, right? You're going to want to keep failing, and you have to have that vulnerability and that humility to want to go on and forward. And I would do the same thing. He and I talked about doing visualization, doing some meditation, doing some things like that. I work with athletes and we come up with these ideas. I help them. And then I always suggest some things that things that they could meditate on, things that they can visualize, things the way they can change their mindset. And if you come in and think, well, this is stupid. How is me closing my eyes and visualizing me, making some baskets or hitting a home run? That's not going to make a difference. And if you believe that, if you believe it's not going to make a difference, guess what? It's not going to make a difference, right? I guarantee that. If I give an idea, if Coach Herm gives an idea, if any coach gives them an idea and the kid says, well, that's not going to work and I'm not going to do it. Well, then guess what? It's not going to work. That's the way it works. Just hearing an idea doesn't do any good. You have to actually practice it. You have to try it. Coach Herm, and we had talked about how, coaching, these strength sessions, these skill sessions are fine, but the only athletes that we see a difference in are the ones that actually take it home and keep working on it. You have to be working on those things. So I have to have athletes that are willing to want to listen to these lessons, listen to these new ideas and try them. And when they do them, I have a ton of success. Again, same with Coach Herm. If I say, if he teaches somebody, hey, let's try this move with your left, or let's speed it up, and they actually work on it, they're going to have success. But you have to come in with the right mindset to be humble. You have to be vulnerable. And honestly, sometimes that comes in. Athletes come to me after they've tried it their own way and it's not working. And they're like, okay, I need some help and I want to try some things. And now you can usually work with an athlete at this point. But I think it goes for life. I think we have to go into life and know that everybody we run into has something to teach us, something we can learn from. Know that you don't know everything. Be humble, be vulnerable. I think that is the path to real toughness, not fake toughness, not false bravado. If you want toughness, if you want to be mentally tough, you have to be vulnerable. You have to have humility. You have to be willing to fail, learn from those failures, and move forward. That's the toughness. It's the practice. It's the practice of being in those hard situations and failing. I really, and sometimes I'll be honest, sometimes life has to break you down a little bit to put you there, especially for younger kids. For the athletes, I start to see them when things get too hard for them, too much pressure, the skill level gets too much. That's when they come in, and it's a natural thing. I get it. There are a few kids that are probably just born with that humility and vulnerability, but also have the drive to still be in athletics, but it's a tough mix. And I get that. So a lot of times it has to have some, failure, doing it the wrong way to get there. So yeah, great interview. I enjoyed it. Coach Herm coming on. And, as always, please, please, please do me a favor, share the podcast. I'm starting to get some more listeners and so I had some really successful episodes, and I love hearing from folks on how they're sharing it, how they're using, how they're implementing the stuff. If you're here listening for the first time, go back and listen to some more podcasts. All of my podcasts are not like time dependent. You can go back and you can listen to some great lessons from coaches of all sports, athletes, all kinds of people, some really good stuff. So like, share, subscribe. I appreciate it. And as always, I'm your host, Coach Matt Tillman. This has been the Mental Metal Podcast. And always remember, forge your metal.
Thanks again for listening to the Mental Metal Podcast, produced by Coraggio Media, sponsored by QuickCut, a video management platform for every level of play, and by Mental Metal Coaching, helping athletes learn to face adversity in a spirited and resilient way. The Mental Metal Podcast is created each week to help players develop more mental toughness, and that is something that will help all of us. So help me out and like and share the Mental Metal Podcast with your friends. Until next time, keep forging your metal.